This is the sixth part of Chapter 4 of An Outline of Esoteric Science by Rudolf Steiner, the chapter entitled Cosmic Evolution and the Human Being, and I'm beginning on page 228, paragraph 80. The effect of the spiritual beings who had remained at the moon stage had two consequences for human beings. Because these beings aroused the possibility of independently regulating and mastering the images of consciousness in the astral body, human consciousness was stripped of the character of merely mirroring the cosmos. Human beings became masters of their knowledge. However, this control originated in the astral body, and so the I, which was actually superior to this body, became constantly dependent on it. This meant that in the future, human beings would be exposed to the ongoing influence of a lower element in their nature, and would therefore be able to sink below the level specified for them by the Earth-Moon beings in the course of cosmic events. In the time that followed, the abnormally developed moon beings exerted a continual influence on human nature. We can contrast these old moon beings, who can be called the Luciferic spirits, to the others who worked down from the Earth's moon to shape human consciousness into a mirror of the cosmos, but gave it no free will. They gave human beings the possibility of unfolding free activity in their consciousness, but at the same time they gave them the possibility of error and of evil. As a result of these processes, human beings' relationship to the sun spirits was different from the one predestined for them by the earth-moon spirits, who strove to develop the mirror of human consciousness in such a way that the influence of the sun spirits would have dominated all of human soul life. These processes were thwarted, and a conflict came about in human beings between the influence of the sun spirits and that of the spirits who had developed abnormally during the moon phase of evolution. This conflict made it impossible for human beings to recognize the physical effects of the sun as such. These remained concealed behind earthly impressions of the outer world. The human astral element, filled with these impressions, was drawn into the domain of the I. From that point onward, this I, which would otherwise only have felt the spark of fire bestowed on it by the spirits of form, and would have subordinated itself to their commands in everything pertaining to outer fire, worked on outer phenomena of warmth through the astral element injected into it, creating a bond of attraction between itself and the earth's fire. This meant that human beings became entangled in earthly matter to a greater degree than had been predestined for them. Previously, each human being had a physical body consisting primarily of fire, air, and water, with only a trace of solid earth substance, but now the solid body grew denser. And whereas previously human beings had been more delicate in their organization and had hovered above solid ground in a sort of floating, swimming movement, they now had to descend from the surroundings of the earth onto parts that were already more or less solidified. The character of the spiritual influences described above, the fact that they were neither natural influences nor ones that work between human beings on a soul level, explains how they could have such physical effects. Soul effects that human beings have on each other do not work as deeply into the bodily element as the spiritual forces that we are considering here. Because human beings were exposing themselves to the outer world's influences through their own mental images, they were subject to error. And because they were living their lives in accordance with desires and passions that they did not allow higher spiritual influences to control, the possibility of illness appeared. One particular effect of the Luciferic influence, however, was that the human beings could no longer experience a given earthly lifetime as a continuation of body-free existence. From this point onward, they assimilated earthly impressions that could be experienced by the astral element injected into them. These impressions united with the forces that destroyed the physical body. Human beings experienced this as a dying off of their earthly life, and so death made its appearance, brought about by human nature itself. This points to a significant mystery of human nature, the human astral body's connection to disease and death. At this point, conditions set in that specifically affected the human life body. It was incorporated into a relationship between the physical body and the astral body that freed it, in some respects, from the effect of abilities human beings had acquired through the luciferic influence. One part of this life body remained outside of the physical body so that it could only be governed by higher beings and not by the human eye. These higher beings were the ones that had left the earth at the time of the sun's separation in order to occupy a new dwelling place under the leadership of one of their exalted fellows. If this part of the life body had remained united with the astral body, human beings would have used previously acquired supersensible powers for self-serving purposes and would have extended the luciferic influence to these powers. This means that they would have gradually freed themselves from the sun beings, and the human eye would have become a completely earthly eye. After the death of the physical body, or even as soon as it started to deteriorate, this earthly eye would have moved into another physical body, the body of a descendant, without first undergoing a connection to higher spiritual beings in a body-free state. In this way, human beings would indeed have become aware of the individual eye, but only as an earthly eye. This was averted by the process that involved the life body and was brought about by the earth-moon beings. The actual individual I was released from the merely earthly I, so that human beings identified only partially with this individual I during life on earth, but at the same time felt the earthly I to be a continuation of the earthly I of their ancestors down through the generations. During life on earth, each human soul felt the presence of a kind of group I extending back to its distant ancestors, and human beings felt themselves to be members of such groups. Only in the body-free state was the individual I able to feel that it was a single and separate being. However, the fact that the I was encumbered with the memory of earth consciousness, of the earthly I, interfered with this individualized state of dimming the view of the spiritual world, which was beginning to be veiled between death and birth, in a way similar to how it was obscured to physical vision on earth. All the changes taking place in the spiritual world while human evolution was passing through these conditions were expressed physically in the gradual regulation of interrelationships between the sun, the moon, and the earth, and in a broader sense those of other celestial bodies as well. We will emphasize a single consequence of these interrelationships, alternating days and nights. The movements of celestial bodies are regulated by the beings that inhabit them. The movement of the earth that caused day and night was brought about by the interrelationships of various spirits superior to human beings. The movement of the moon came about in a similar way, so that the spirits of form could work on the physical human body in the right way and in the right rhythm through the moon's revolution around the earth after their separation. At this point, the human eye and astral body were working in the physical body and the life body by day. At night, this working ceased, and the eye and the astral body left the physical and ether bodies and were totally in the domain of the sons of life, angels, the spirits of fire, archangels, the spirits of personality, and the spirits of form. In addition to the spirits of form, the spirits of motion, the spirits of wisdom, and the thrones also included the physical and life bodies in their field of activity. In this way, damage to the human being from the effects of astral bodies' mistakes during the day could be corrected. Now that the number of human bodies on earth was increasing again, There was no longer any reason for them not to receive human souls. Because of how the forces of the Earth's moon were now working, the human bodies taking shape under their influence were fully fit to embody human souls, so the souls that had previously moved to Mars, Jupiter, and so forth were led back down to Earth. This meant that there was a soul available for each human descendant born over the course of the generations. This continued over a long period of time, so the movement of souls back to Earth corresponded to the increase in the number of human beings. At this time, souls undergoing earthly death and leaving their bodies retained a memory-like echo of earthly individuality during the body-free state. The effect of this memory was that these souls reincarnated whenever bodies appropriate for them were born again on Earth. As time went on, human offspring came to include both people with souls that came from outside, those who were appearing on Earth for the first time since its very earliest stages, and others with souls reincarnating on Earth. During the period that followed, there were fewer and fewer of the young souls that were appearing for the first time, and more reincarnated souls. But for a long time, the human race did consist of these two types of human beings as a result of this state of affairs. During this period, human beings felt more united with their ancestors through their common group I during life on Earth. While the experience of the individual I was correspondingly stronger in the body-free state between death and a new birth, the souls coming from celestial space to enter human bodies were in a different situation from the ones who already had one or more Earth lives behind them. The new souls brought with them into physical life on Earth only the conditions they had been subjected to by the higher spiritual worlds and by their own experiences outside the earthly domain. The others had added conditions themselves during earlier lifetimes. At this point, the destiny of the new souls was determined by things that lay outside their new earthly circumstances, while the destiny of the reincarnated souls was determined also by what they themselves had done in earlier lifetimes under earthly circumstances. Along with reincarnation, individual human karma also appeared. The fact that the human life body had been withdrawn from the astral body's influence, as described above, meant that the circumstances of reproduction did not fall within the scope of human consciousness, but were subject to control by the spiritual world. When a soul was meant to descend into the earthly sphere, the impulse to reproduce appeared in earth humans. To a certain extent, this whole process was shrouded in mysterious darkness as far as earthly consciousness was concerned. But the consequences of this partial separation of the life body from the physical body also appeared within earthly life. The life body's abilities could be very much enhanced through the influence of the spirit. As far as human soul life was concerned, this was expressed in the exceptional degree to which memory developed. In the human beings of this time, independent, logical thinking was only at its earliest beginning stages. In contrast, their capacity for memory was almost boundless. It was also outwardly apparent that human beings had a direct, feeling-like knowledge of the working forces in all living things. The forces of life and reproduction of the animal kingdom, and especially those of the plant kingdom, were at their disposal. For example, they could extract and apply what rouses a plant to growth, just as we now extract the forces of lifeless nature, such as those lying dormant in anthracite, and apply them to making machines move. More details on the subject may be found in my booklet, Our Atlantean Ancestors. Footnote. This first appeared as a chapter in, quote, Aus der Akasha Chronik, end quote, and that's from parentheses from the Akashic Chronicle, in the magazine Lucifer Gnosis, numbers 14 through 16, July through September 1904, which Rudolf Steiner founded and edited. It is contained in Cosmic Memory, Prehistory of Earth and Man, Steiner Books, Blauvelt, New York, 1990, pages 38 to 41. End of footnote. The inner soul life of human beings also changed in a great many ways because of the luciferic influence. It would be possible to describe many types of feelings and sensations that resulted from this, but only a few of them will be mentioned here. Before this influence took effect, everything human beings shaped and did was carried out in the sense intended by higher spiritual beings. There was a predetermined plan for everything that was supposed to be done. To the extent that human beings' consciousness had already developed, it could predict how things would have to develop in future according to this preconceived plan. This awareness of what the future would bring was lost as the veil of earthly perceptions was woven over the manifestations of higher spiritual beings. The actual forces of the sun beings were concealed in these perceptions. From this point onward, the future became uncertain. Along with this uncertainty, the possibility of fear was implanted in the human soul. Fear is a direct consequence of error. But we will also see how human beings, formerly involuntarily subject to certain forces, became independent of them under the luciferic influence. From this point onward, they were capable of making decisions on their own. Freedom is the result of this influence, and fear and similar feelings are simply concomitants of human evolution toward freedom. Human beings had fallen under the influence of earthly forces through the luciferic powers. Seen spiritually, the appearance of fear indicates that still other powers were at work within the earthly forces. These other powers had become abnormal much earlier in the course of evolution than the luciferic powers. Human beings absorbed their influence along with the earthly forces. They contributed the character of fear to feelings whose effect would otherwise have been quite different. These beings can be called Ahrimanic, or in the Goethean sense, Mephistophelian. Although the luciferic influence first made itself felt among the most advanced human beings, it soon spread to others as well. The descendants of advanced human beings intermingled with the less advanced ones described above, allowing the luciferic force to reach them too. But the life bodies of souls returning from the planets could not be protected to the same extent as those belonging to the descendants of souls that had remained on Earth, who were protected by an exalted being whose leadership in the cosmos was in effect when the sun separated from the earth. In the domain under consideration here, this being appeared as the ruler of the sun kingdom. The exalted beings who had attained sufficient maturity through their cosmic evolution moved with this being to a dwelling place on the sun. However, there were also beings who had not ascended to such heights at the time of the sun separation, and they had to look for different settings for their activity. These were the beings who brought about the withdrawal of Jupiter and the other planets from the common cosmic substance that was originally included in the physical organism of the Earth. Jupiter became the dwelling place of some of the beings who had not matured to the level of the sun. The most advanced among them became the leader of Jupiter, just as the leader of the sun's evolution became the higher eye that worked in the life body of the descendants of human beings who had remained on Earth. This Jupiter leader became the higher eye that spread like a common consciousness through the human beings who had their origins in the interbreeding of Earth offspring with humans who first appeared on Earth during the period of the air element, and then moved to Jupiter. In the sense of spiritual science, we can call these the quote-unquote Jupiter humans. They were descended from beings who had still embodied human souls at a certain time in the distant past, but had not been mature enough to participate in the first contact with fire at the beginning of the Earth phase of evolution. These were souls that fell between the human and animal kingdoms. There were also beings who had detached Mars from the common cosmic substance and made it their dwelling place under the leadership of their most advanced member. A third type of human beings fell under their influence. These were Mars humans, who also came into existence through interbreeding. Parenthesis, this information sheds light on the origins of the planets of our solar system. All of the celestial bodies in the system came about because of the various stages of maturity of the beings inhabiting them. However, it is not possible to go into all the details of these cosmic divisions here, of course. Parenthesis. Human beings who perceived the presence of the exalted sun being in their life bodies can be called, quote-unquote, sun humans. The beings who lived in them as their higher I, only in the generations, of course, not in individuals, is one who was later given various names as human beings acquired conscious knowledge of him. To present-day human beings, the Christ's relationship to the cosmos is revealed in this being. We can also distinguish Saturn humans. The being who appears as their higher I had to leave the common cosmic substance, along with his associates, already before the sun's separation from the earth. In human beings of this type, both the life body and the physical body had portions that remained untouched by the luciferic influence. Now, in the case of the lower types of human beings, the life body was too unprotected to be able to withstand the luciferic influence. These human beings were capable of capriciously extending the free will of the I spark within themselves to the point where it caused mighty and destructive fires in their surroundings, resulting in a tremendous catastrophe on Earth. A large part of the inhabited Earth was destroyed by firestorms, and with it the human beings who had succumbed to error. Only a small number who had remained partially untouched by error were able to escape to an area of the earth that had been protected from the corrupting influence of humans up to that point. Atlantis. The land in the area presently covered by the Atlantic Ocean proved to be an especially appropriate dwelling place for this new breed of humanity. The human beings who were most untouched by error retreated to this area. Only scattered groups occupied other areas of the earth. In the sense of spiritual science, the part of the earth that once existed between present-day Europe, Africa, and America can be called Atlantis. Footnote: see Plato's Timaeus 24-25e and Critias 112e to 121c. End of footnote. Parenthesis. The relevant literature makes references of a sort to the pre-Atlantean stage of humanity's evolution that is described in the preceding section of this chapter. It is called the Lemurian Age of the Earth, and it is followed by the Atlantean Age. However, the time when the moon forces had still not unleashed their primary effects can be called the Hyperborean Age. This is preceded by still another age that coincides with the very earliest period in the physical evolution of the Earth. In the biblical tradition, this time prior to the intervention of the luciferic beings is called the Age of Paradise. And human beings' descent to earth and their entanglement in the world of the senses is known as the expulsion from paradise. Parenthesis. The Atlantis period of evolution was the period of the actual division of the human race into the Saturn, Sun, Jupiter, and Mars groups. This division had only been prefigured prior to that time. The separation of the waking and sleeping states also had specific consequences that became especially evident among humankind on Atlantis. The human astral body and the I spent the night in the domain of superior beings, up to and including the spirits of personality. Part of the life body was not bound up with the physical body, and because human beings were able to remain united with this part during sleep, they were able to have perceptions of the sons of life, or angels, and the spirits of fire, or archangels. Because of the luciferic influence, however, their perception of the spirits of personality remained unclear. But in addition to the angels and archangels, human beings in this state were able to perceive the beings who, as a result of having remained behind on sun or moon, were incapable of entering earth existence, and therefore had to remain in the world of soul and spirit. The luciferic principle, however, made it possible for human beings to draw these beings into the domain of souls separated from their physical bodies. This meant that human beings came in contact with beings who had a very strong seductive effect on them and increased the soul's leanings toward error, especially with regard to misusing the forces of growth and reproduction which had come under human control through the separation of the human physical and ether bodies. During the Atlantean Age, some individuals were granted the possibility of being entangled in the world of the senses to the least possible extent. This transformed the luciferic influence from an obstacle to human evolution into a means of further advancement that put these individuals in a position to develop their knowledge of earthly things earlier than would have been possible otherwise. In this process, these people attempted to eliminate error from their mental activity and to discover the original intentions of spiritual beings in the phenomena of the world. They kept themselves free of urges and desires of the astral body that turned only toward the world of the senses, and thus they became increasingly free of the astral body's errors. The condition this brought about in them led them to perceive only with a part of the life body that was separate from the physical body as described above. Under these conditions, the physical body's perceptive capacity was wiped out, so to speak, and the physical body itself seemed dead. Through their life bodies, these human beings then united completely with the domain of the spirits of form, who showed them how they were being led and guided by the exalted being who had assumed leadership during the separation of sun and earth, and who was later to make human beings receptive to understanding the Christ. These individuals were initiates. However, because human individualities had entered the domain of the moon beings as described above, as a rule, even these initiates could not be directly touched by the great sun spirit, who could only be shown to them by the moon spirits as if in a reflection. They saw only the sun beings' reflected glory. These individuals became leaders of the other human beings and were able to communicate to them the mysteries they had beheld. They attracted disciples whom they taught how to attain the state leading to initiation. Their knowledge, previously revealed through the Christ, could be acquired only by people who were, quote-unquote, sun-humans, in the sense indicated earlier. They nurtured their mysterious knowledge and the practices that led to it in a special place we'll call the Christ Oracle, or Sun Oracle. That is, quote-unquote, oracle in the sense of a place where the intentions of spiritual beings are perceived. What is said here about the Christ will be misunderstood unless we consider the fact that supersensible knowledge necessarily sees the appearance of the Christ on earth as an event that was foretold by those who were already aware of the meaning of the earth's evolution prior to this event. It would be a mistake to assume that these initiates had a relationship to the Christ that would only be possible later, after his actual appearance on earth. However, they were able to grasp in a prophetic way and make comprehensible to their disciples that anyone touched by the power of the sun being sees the Christ approaching the earth. Other oracles were called into being by the Saturn, Mars, and Jupiter humans. The vision of the initiates of each group was directed upward only as far as the being who could be discerned as the corresponding higher eye in the life bodies of the members of their group. This is how the wisdom of Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars acquired followers. In addition to these methods of initiation, there were also methods for those who had absorbed too much of the luciferic principle to allow as large a part of the life body to separate from the physical body as was the case in sun humans. In these people, the astral body retained more of the life body in the physical body, and they were incapable of being brought to a prophetic revelation of the Christ through the above-mentioned conditions. Because of the luciferic principle's greater influence on their astral bodies, they had to undergo more difficult preparations before being able, in a less body-free state than the others, to behold the other higher beings, though not the Christ. Among the beings they were able to behold, however, were certain ones who, although they had left the earth when the sun separated from it, were not yet at a level that would have permitted them to participate in the sun's evolution for any length of time. After the sun's separation from the earth, these beings pulled Venus out of the earth in order to make it their dwelling place. The being who became their leader also became the higher I of the group of initiates and their followers described above. Something similar happened with the leading spirit of Mercury with regard to humans of a different type. This is how the Venus and Mercury oracles came about. Human beings of the particular type who had absorbed the most Luciferic influence were able to reach up only as far as the leader of the beings who had been the first to be expelled from the sun's evolution. This being did not occupy a particular planet in cosmic space, but lived in the surroundings of the earth itself, having reunited with it after returning from the sun. This being manifested as the higher I of human beings, who can be called followers of the Vulcan Oracle. Their vision was directed more toward earthly phenomena than was the case with the other initiates, and they laid the first foundations for what later became the arts and sciences among human beings. In contrast, the Mercury initiates laid the basis for knowledge of more supersensible things, and the Venus initiates did this to an even greater extent. The fact that the Vulcan, Mercury, and Venus initiates received their knowledge more in the form of their own thoughts and ideas distinguished them from the Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars initiates, who received their mysteries more as a revelation from above and in a more finished state. The Christ initiates occupied the middle ground, receiving the ability to clothe their mysteries in human concepts along with their direct revelations. The Saturn, Jupiter, and Mars initiates had to express themselves in symbols to a greater extent, while the Christ, Venus, Mercury, and Vulcan initiates were more able to communicate through concepts. What reached Atlantean humanity in this way happened indirectly, by way of the initiates. However, the rest of humankind also received special faculties as a result of the Luciferic principle, because the exalted cosmic beings transformed certain faculties that might otherwise have led to ruin into a blessing. One such faculty was speech. Human beings received it as a result of the densification into the physical material nature and the separation of part of the life body from the physical body. During the time following the moon's separation, human beings at first felt united with their physical ancestors through the group I. But this common consciousness, connecting descendants and ancestors, was gradually lost over the course of the generations. Later, descendants had an inner memory that no longer reached back to their earlier ancestors, but only to not very distant ones. People's memories of one or the other ancestor appeared only during contact with the spiritual world in their sleep-like states. They were then likely to feel at one with their ancestors. They believed these ancestors had reappeared in themselves. This was an erroneous idea of reincarnation that emerged primarily in the last part of the Atlantean Age. The truth about reincarnation could only be experienced in the schools of the initiates. Only the initiates who saw human souls in the body-free state, passing from one incarnation to another, were able to communicate the truth about this to their disciples. At the point in the distant past that we are talking about here, the human physical figure was still very different from how it is at present. To a great extent, it was still the expression of soul characteristics. Human beings still consisted of matter that was softer and more delicate than what they acquired later. What is solid today was then still soft, supple, and malleable. Human beings with more pronounced soul and spiritual elements were delicate, mobile, and expressive in their bodily structure, while those who were spiritually less developed had body forms that were coarse, immobile, and less malleable. Advancement on a soul level contracted the limbs and kept a person's stature small, while delayed soul development and entanglement in sensuality expressed itself in gigantic size. During their growth period, people's bodies took shape according to what was forming in their souls in a way that seems incredible or even fantastic to our modern way of looking at things. Moral depravity in a person's passions, drives, and instincts resulted in a gigantic increase in material substance. Our present human physical form came about through contracting, densifying, and solidifying the Atlantean one. Prior to the Atlantean age, human beings were faithful copies of their soul character, but the causes that led to the post-Atlantean human form, which is solid and relatively independent of any soul qualities, were inherent in the processes of Atlantean evolution. The animal kingdom on Earth became dense in its forms much earlier than human beings. Under no circumstances can the laws currently governing the shapes of forms, the shaping of forms in the kingdoms of nature be extended to the distant past. The end of Atlantis. Toward the middle of the Atlantean age, a great disaster was gradually building up within humankind. The secrets of the initiates should have been carefully protected from individuals who had not prepared their astral bodies to receive this knowledge by cleansing them of error. When such people did acquire an insight into this hidden knowledge, into the laws through which higher beings guided the forces of nature, they used these laws for purposes that served their aberrant needs and passions. The danger became even greater when these people entered the domain of the inferior spiritual beings who could not participate in Earth's normal evolution and worked against it. These beings were constantly influencing human beings, arousing interests in them that actually worked contrary to human well-being. At that time, human beings still had the ability to use the natural growth and reproductive forces of animals and humans for their own purposes. Not only ordinary people, but also some initiates, succumbed to the temptations of the inferior spiritual beings and used these supersensible forces in the service of aims that ran counter to humanity's evolution. To carry this out, they chose associates who were not initiates and who used the mysteries of nature's supersensible workings exclusively for baser purposes. The consequence was great depravity among humankind. The evil spread further and further, and since the forces of growth and reproduction, when uprooted and applied out of context, have a mysterious connection to certain forces at work in air and water, these human actions released powerfully destructive natural forces. This led to the gradual destruction of the Atlantean region through catastrophes involving the Earth's air and water. The Atlanteans, at least those who did not perish in the storms, were forced to emigrate. The storms were changing the entire face of the earth. Europe, Asia, and Africa on one side, and America on the other were gradually acquiring the shapes they have today. Hordes of emigrants headed for these lands. As far as our present situation is concerned, the most important migrations were the ones that moved eastward from Atlantis. Europe, Asia, and Africa were gradually settled by descendants of the Atlanteans. Various peoples, differing in their degrees of both development and depravity, took up residence there. In their midst marched the initiates, who guarded the mysteries of the oracles and established centers in various regions where the services of Jupiter, Venus, and so on were cultivated in both the good sense and the bad. The betrayal of the Vulcan mysteries had an especially negative effect because their followers' view was the most focused on earthly circumstances. This betrayal forced human beings to become dependent on spiritual beings whose prior development made them reject everything coming from the spiritual world that had evolved as a result of the Earth's separation from the sun. As a result of this, these beings worked specifically in the human element that resulted from having sensory perceptions that drew a veil over the spiritual element. From this point onward, these beings acquired a great deal of influence over many of the Earth's human inhabitants. This influence first made itself felt in the fact that human beings were increasingly deprived of the feeling for the spiritual element. Since the size, form, and flexibility of the human physical body were still determined by soul qualities to a very great extent during this period, the betrayal of the mysteries also came to light in corresponding changes in the human race. Amorphous human figures, grotesque in both size and shape, were created wherever human depravity was especially evident, wherever supersensible forces were placed in the service of baser drives, desires, and passions. Such figures, however, could not persist beyond the actual Atlantean period. They died out. Physically, post-Atlantean humankind developed from Atlantean ancestors, whose bodily forms had already solidified in a way that did not allow them to succumb to soul forces that were contrary to nature. There was a certain period in Atlantean evolution when the laws prevailing in and around the earth resulted in conditions that forced human forms to solidify. Although the races of humanity that had already solidified before this period were able to continue reproducing for a long time, their bodies gradually grew so restricting for the souls incarnating into them that these races were forced to die out. In actual fact, some of these racial forms persisted into post-Atlantean times, and modified forms of the ones that remained sufficiently flexible continued to exist for a very long time. However, the ones among them that did remain flexible beyond this time tended to embody souls that had experienced the damaging influence of the betrayal of the mysteries to a very great extent. These forms were destined to die out quickly. Thus, ever since the middle of the Atlantean age, beings had been present who exerted their influence in human evolution by making human beings live their way into the physical world of the senses in an unspiritual way. This went so far that instead of the true form of this world, people saw phantasmagoric delusions and illusions of all sorts. However, human beings were exposed not only to the Luciferic influence, but also to the influence of those other beings we spoke about earlier, whose leader can be called Ahriman. Parenthesis, this is the name that was given to this being later on during the Persian civilization. Mephistopheles is the same being. Parenthesis. Through this influence, human beings who had died fell into the hands of powers that made them appear like beings exclusively inclined toward earthly sensual circumstances. They were increasingly deprived of their free view into the processes of the spiritual world. They had to feel that they were in Ahriman's power and were excluded from the fellowship of the spiritual world to a certain extent. One especially significant oracle had preserved the ancient service in the purest form amid the general decline. It was one of the Christ oracles, and for that reason was able to preserve not only the mystery of the Christ, but also the mysteries of the other oracles, since revealing the most exalted sun spirit also disclosed the leading spirits of Saturn, Jupiter, and so on. The initiates of this sun oracle knew the secret of how to generate for this or that human being the types of life bodies that had been possessed by the best initiates of Jupiter, Mercury, and so on. With the means at their disposal, which cannot be discussed further here, they effectively perpetuated reproductions of the best life bodies of ancient initiates and implanted them later in suitable individuals. The Venus, Mercury, and Vulcan initiates made it possible for similar processes to take place with regard to astral bodies. At a certain point in time, the leading Christ initiate was isolated with a few associates who were only capable of receiving the secrets of the cosmos to a very limited extent, because they were naturally predisposed to having physical and life bodies with the least degree of separation between them. at that time, such individuals were the best ones to assure the further progress of humankind. Because they experienced less and less during the sleeping state, the spiritual world was increasingly closed to them, and they lacked all understanding of what had been revealed in ancient times, when human beings occupied only life bodies rather than physical bodies. The individuals in the immediate surroundings of this leader of the Christ oracle were the most advanced with regard to reuniting the physical body with the portion of the life body that was formerly separate from it. This reunification was gradually being accomplished among human beings as a consequence of changes that had taken place in their Atlantean home and on Earth in general. Human physical and life bodies were coinciding to an ever greater extent. As a result of this, human beings lost their previously boundless faculty of memory, and a life of thought began for them. The part of the life body that was united with the physical body transformed the physical brain into the actual instrument of thinking. Only after this did human beings actually experience the I within the physical body. Self-awareness awakened for the first time. To begin with, this was actually true of only a small percentage of human beings, primarily associates of the leader of the Christ oracle. The masses of human beings scattered over Europe, Asia, and Africa preserved the remnants of older states of consciousness to varying degrees, and therefore experienced the supersensible world directly. Post-Atlantean civilizations, ancient India. The Christ initiates associates were people of highly developed intellect, but of all the people living at that time, they had the least experience in the supersensible domain. This initiate moved with them from the west to the east, to an area in Central Asia, wanting to protect them as much as possible from contact with human beings of less advanced consciousness. He educated these associates of his, and more especially their descendants, in accordance with the mysteries that were revealed to him. Thus he trained a whole host of human beings who took to heart impulses that were in harmony with the mysteries of the Christ initiation. From among them he selected the 7 best to receive life bodies and astral bodies that were reproductions of those of the 7 greatest Atlantean initiates. In this way he educated 1 successor for each of the initiates of Christ, Saturn, Jupiter, and so on. These 7 new initiates became the teachers and leaders of the human beings who had settled in the southern part of Asia, specifically in ancient India. Since these great teachers were actually endowed with reproductions of the life bodies of their spiritual ancestors, what was present in their astral bodies, namely the knowledge and understanding they had assimilated themselves, did not extend to what was revealed to them through their life bodies. If this revelation was to speak in them, they had to silence their own knowledge and understanding. When they did so, the exalted beings who had spoken to their spiritual ancestors also spoke through them and out of them. Except when such beings were speaking through them, these were simple people, gifted with whatever degree of intellectual and emotional education they had acquired on their own. At that time, India was occupied by human beings who had superbly preserved a living memory of the ancient Atlantean state of soul that had permitted experience in the spiritual world. A large number of these people also possessed a very strong tendency of heart and mind to want to experience this supersensible world. Thanks to the wise guidance of destiny, the majority of people of this type, who came from the best portions of the Atlantean population, had migrated to southern Asia. In addition to this majority, others had immigrated at different times. The Christ initiate mentioned above appointed his 7 greatest disciples to be the teachers of this association of human beings, to give their wisdom and their commandments to this group of people. For many of these ancient Indians, very little preparation was required to enliven in them the barely extinguished faculties that led to observing the supersensible world, because a longing for this world was actually a fundamental mood of Indian souls. They felt that the original home of human beings was in this supersensible world, that they had been transplanted from this world to the world that can be provided by outer sensory perception and the sense-bound intellect. They felt that the supersensible world was the true one, and that the sensory world was Maya, an illusion of human perception. They strove by all possible means to open a view into the spiritual world. They were unable to develop any interest in the illusory world of the senses, or only to the extent that it proved to be a veil over the supersensible world. The power that the seven great teachers could exert on people like this was tremendous, and what they revealed made its way deep into human souls. And because the life bodies and astral bodies that had been passed down to them bestowed sublime powers on these teachers, they were able to have magical effects on their disciples. They did not actually teach, but their personalities acted upon those of others as if through magical powers. The civilization that came about in this way was completely imbued with supersensible wisdom. What is contained in the Vedas, the books of Indian wisdom, is not the original form of the exalted wisdom fostered by these great teachers in ancient times, but only a feeble echo of it. Only supersensible sight can look back to the original unrecorded wisdom behind what was written. An especially prominent characteristic of this original wisdom is the harmony and accord that existed among the various oracles of Atlantean times. Each of the great teachers could divulge the wisdom of one of the oracles, and these various aspects of wisdom were in complete harmony, because the fundamental wisdom of the initiation that prophesied the coming of the Christ stood behind all of them. However, the teacher who was the spiritual successor of the Christ initiate did not present what this initiate himself, who had remained in the background of evolution, was capable of revealing. Initially, it was not possible for the Atlantean Christ initiate to pass on his high office to any post-Atlantean individual. In contrast to the Atlantean Christ initiate, who was able to completely transmute his perception of the Christ mystery into human concepts, the Indian Christ initiate was only capable of presenting a reflection of this mystery in signs and symbols, because his humanly acquired conceptual abilities could not encompass this mystery. Nonetheless, the result of the union of the seven teachers was a panorama of wisdom expressing their knowledge of the supersensible world, only parts of which could have been promulgated in the old Atlantean oracle. This panorama revealed the exalted leadership of the cosmic world and quietly alluded to a great sun spirit, the concealed being who was enthroned above the beings revealed by the seven teachers. What the term ancient Indians means here is not what is usually understood by it. No outer documents have come down to us from the time we are speaking of here. The nation of people now known as Indians belongs to a historical stage of evolution that came about only much later than this. We must recognize the, in quotes, Indian culture described here as the prevailing culture of the first post-Atlantean epoch in Earth's history. After that came a second post-Atlantean epoch, when the quote-unquote Old Persian civilization described later on in this book was the dominant culture. Still later, the Egypto-Chaldean civilization developed. It, too, will be described later. While the second and third post-Atlantean cultural epochs were taking shape, the ancient Indian culture also underwent its own second and third periods. The third period is what is commonly described as ancient India. We must not confuse what is described here with the historical ancient India spoken of elsewhere. What later led to separating people into castes was another characteristic of the culture of ancient India. The inhabitants of India were descendants of Atlanteans who had belonged to different human types, the Saturn humans, Jupiter humans, and so on. Through supersensible teaching, they understood that a soul's position in a certain caste was not a matter of coincidence, but a matter of self-determination. The fact that many people were able to stir up inner memories of their ancestors, as described earlier, made it easier for them to understand supersensible teachings in this way, but it also easily led to erroneous ideas about reincarnation. During the Atlantean age, the truth about reincarnation could only be acquired through the initiates. Similarly, during the earliest Indian times, this truth could only be acquired through direct contact with the great teachers. In fact, the mistaken concept of reincarnation that was described earlier was extremely prevalent among the people who had spread out over Europe, Asia, and Africa after the sinking of Atlantis. And because initiates who had gone astray during the Atlantean evolutionary period had also shared this mystery with people who were not ready to receive it, people increasingly confused the correct idea with the false one. Many of these people still possessed a dusk-like kind of clairvoyance as a legacy of the Atlantean age. While the Atlanteans entered the domain of the spiritual world during sleep, their descendants experienced this spiritual world in abnormal, intermediate states between waking and sleeping. In these states, images of an older time to which their ancestors had belonged appeared in them, so they considered themselves reincarnations of people who had lived in those times. Teachings about reincarnation that contradicted the initiates' genuine ideas on the subject spread over the entire earth. Ancient Persian Civilization. Ongoing migrations from west to east since the beginning of the destruction of Atlantis led to the settlement of the Middle East by a group of people whose descendants went down in history as the Persians and their affiliated tribes. Supersensible cognition, however, must look much further back in time than the recorded history of these ethnic groups. We must first speak about the later Persians' very distant ancestors, who issued in the second great epoch of civilization in post-Atlantean evolution. It came about after the Indian civilization. The people of this second epoch had a different task from the Indians. Their inclinations and longings were not directed only at the supersensible world, but were also adapted to the physical world of the senses. They began to love the earth. They valued what human beings could conquer for themselves on earth, and what they could gain through earthly forces. Their accomplishments as a warrior nation, and the methods they invented for extracting the earth's treasures, are related to this characteristic of their nature. There was no danger that their longing for the supersensible would turn them completely away from the illusion of the physical sense perceptible world. On the contrary, they were more in danger of completely losing their soul's connection to the supersensible world because of their appreciation for the physical world. The character of the oracles that had been transplanted from Atlantis also reflected the general character of the people. Formerly, human beings had been able to acquire certain powers by experiencing the supersensible world. At this time, it was still possible to control some lower forms of these powers. Of these powers, there were those cultivated in the oracles that guided natural phenomena in ways that served personal human interests. At this time, in the past, people still had great ability to control forces in nature that later retreated beyond the reach of human will. The guardians of the oracles, who had inner forces at their command that were related to fire and other elements, can be called magi or magicians. The legacy of supersensible knowledge and supersensible forces that they had preserved for themselves, although insignificant in comparison to what human beings had been capable of in the still more distant past, appeared in many different forms, ranging from the noblest arts, whose only purpose was the welfare of human beings, to the most reprehensible practices. The Luciferic principle prevailed in these people in a very particular way, connecting them with everything that could distract human beings from the intentions of the higher beings who would have been the sole guides of human progress if the Luciferic intervention had not happened. Even the members of this people who were still gifted with remnants of the ancient clairvoyant state, the intermediary state between waking and sleeping that was described earlier, felt very drawn to the inferior beings of the spiritual world. Because these people needed a spiritual impetus that would counteract this character trait in them, they were supplied with leadership by what had also been the source of ancient Indian spiritual life, namely the guardian of the mysteries of the Sun Oracle. For these people, the guardian of the Sun Oracle provided a leader who can be known by the name that has come down to us in history as Zarathustra, or Zoroaster. But it must be emphasized that the person we are speaking about here belonged to a much earlier age than the historical bearer of that name. However, we are dealing here with a question of spiritual science rather than one of outer historical research. Anyone who cannot help but think of a later age in connection with the bearer of the name Zarathustra can reconcile this with spiritual science by thinking of the historical Zarathustra as a successor to the first great Zarathustra, as someone who assumed his name and worked in the spirit of his teaching. The impulse Zarathustra needed to provide for his people consisted in pointing out that the physical world of the senses is more than just the spiritless thing people encounter when they fall exclusively under the influence of the being of Lucifer. Human beings owe their personal independence and their sense of freedom to this being. However, Lucifer is supposed to work in them in harmony with the opposite spiritual principle. It was important for the ancient Persian people to remain alert to the presence of this other spiritual being. Their inclination toward the physical world of the senses threatened to make them merge completely with the Luciferic beings. Now, the initiation Zarathustra had received through the guardian of the Sun Oracle allowed him to receive the revelations of the exalted Sun beings. His training had led him to special states of consciousness in which he was able to behold the Sun beings' leader, who had taken the human ether body under his protection, as described earlier. Zarathustra knew that this being was guiding the evolution of humanity, but would only be able to descend to Earth from cosmic space at a certain point in the future. For this to happen, this being would have to be able to live in the astral body of a human being in the same way that he had been able to work in the human life body ever since the Luciferic intervention took place. For this to happen, a human being would have to appear who had transformed the astral body back to the stage it would have attained without Lucifer at a certain other point in time, parenthesis in the middle of the Atlantean period of evolution, parenthesis. Without Lucifer, human beings would have reached this stage earlier, but without personal independence and without the possibility of freedom. From this point onward, however, human beings were to regain this high level in spite of these traits of their character. In his clairvoyant states, Zarathustra saw that in humankind's future evolution, it would be possible for a specific person to have an astral body of this sort. He also knew that until this time arrived, it was impossible to find the spiritual forces of the sun on earth. They could be perceived, however, by means of supersensible sight in the domain of the spiritual portion of the sun. He was able to behold these forces when he turned his clairvoyant gaze toward the sun, and he brought his people tidings of the nature of these forces, which at that time could be found only in the spiritual world, but would later descend to earth. In this way he proclaimed the great spirit of the sun, the spirit of light, parenthesis, the sun aura, Ahura Mazdao, or Ormuzd, parenthesis. For Zarathustra and his followers, this spirit of light became manifest as the Spirit who turns his countenance toward human beings from the spiritual world and prepares the future within humankind. This Spirit who points to the Christ before his appearance on earth was the Spirit Zarathustra proclaimed as the Spirit of Light. In contrast, Zarathustra depicted Ahriman, parenthesis, Angra Manju, Manju maybe, parenthesis, as a power whose influence causes the human soul life to deteriorate when it surrenders to this influence in a one-sided way. This power is none other than the one described earlier as having achieved a particular dominion over the earth ever since the betrayal of the Vulcan mysteries. Alongside his tidings of the light god, Zarathustra also proclaimed the doctrine concerning spiritual beings that reveal themselves to the purified consciousness of the seer as the companions of the Spirit of Light. In stark contrast to these beings were the tempters who were appearing to the unpurified remnants of clairvoyance that had been retained from Atlantean times. It had to be made clear to the ancient Persians that the human soul, to the extent that it was inclined toward working and striving in the physical world of the senses, was the battleground in a conflict between the power of the light god and that of his adversary. Zarathustra showed how human beings had to act so as not to be led into the abyss by this adversary, whose influence might be turned to good through the power of the Spirit of Light. Egypto-Chaldean Civilization. A third post-Atlantean cultural epoch first developed among the peoples who eventually migrated into the Middle East and North Africa, the Chaldeans, Babylonians, and Assyrians on the one hand, and the Egyptians on the other. They developed a still different understanding of the physical sense-perceptible world than the ancient Persians. In comparison to other ethnic groups, they had acquired much more of a spiritual predisposition for intellectual endowment, for the ability to think that had been developing since the later part of the Atlantean age. As we know, it was the task of post-Atlantean humanity to develop soul faculties that could be acquired through awakened powers of thought and feeling that are not directly stimulated by the spiritual world, but come about when human beings observe the world of the senses, find their way into it, and adapt it. Conquering the physical world with these human faculties must be seen as the mission of post-Atlantean humanity. This conquest proceeded step by step. In ancient India, although people's soul makeup already directed them toward the physical world, they still saw it as an illusion, and their spirits turned toward the supersensible world. In contrast, the people of ancient Persia began an attempt to conquer the physical world of the senses, but to a large extent they still did so with soul forces that were the legacy of a time when human beings could reach directly into the supersensible world. Among the peoples of the third cultural epoch, souls had lost much of their supersensible faculties. They had to investigate the spirit's manifestations in their sense-perceptible environment. Their progress came from discovering and inventing the cultural means of advancement that this environment yielded. Humankind's sciences came about through deriving the laws of the spiritual world from the physical sense world that concealed it. Technology and the arts and their tools and methods came about through recognizing and applying the forces of this sensory world. The Chaldeans and Babylonians no longer saw the world of the senses as an illusion. They saw its natural kingdoms, its mountains and seas, its air and water, as manifestations of the spiritual deeds of powers standing behind this world, and they attempted to discover the laws governing these powers. To the Egyptians, the earth was the setting for their work. In the state in which it was given to them, it was in need of being transformed through their own intellectual forces, so that it would reflect the impact of human power. The oracles that had been transplanted from Atlantis to Egypt originated primarily in the Atlantean Mercury Oracle, but there were also others, the Venus oracles, for example. What these oracles cultivated in the Egyptian people became the seed of a new civilization. This seed originated with a great leader who had been trained in the Persian mysteries of Zarathustra and was a reincarnation of one of the disciples of the great Zarathustra himself. If we want to cite a historical name, we can call him Hermes. Through absorbing the Zarathustrian mysteries, he was able to find the right way to guide the Egyptian people. In earthly life, between birth and death, the Egyptians approached the physical world of the senses with their understanding in a way that allowed them to perceive the spiritual world behind the world of the senses only to a very limited extent. However, they were able to recognize spiritual laws in the sense-perceptible world. Therefore, they could not be taught about this spiritual world as one they would be able to enter during life on earth. But it was possible to show them how human beings, in the body-free state after death, would commune with the world of spirits that left impressions in the sense-perceptible physical domain during an earthly human lifetime. Let me read that sentence again. Therefore, they could not be taught about this spiritual world as one they would be able to enter during life on earth. But it was possible to show them how human beings in the body-free state after death would commune with the world of the spirits that left impressions in the sense-perceptible physical domain during an earthly human lifetime. Hermes taught that to the extent human beings on earth applied their forces to working in accordance with the intentions of spiritual powers, they make it possible for them to unite with these powers after death. In particular, those who had worked most diligently in this direction between birth and death would be united with Osiris, the exalted sun being. The Chaldean-Babylonian aspect of this cultural stream was more emphatic than the Egyptian in directing the human mind toward the physical world of the senses. The laws of this world were investigated, and spiritual archetypes were perceived in their sense-perceptible images. However, in many respects, this people remained caught in the sense-perceptible element. Instead of a star's spirit, the star was pushed into the foreground, and the same was true of other spiritual beings and their earthly manifestations. Only their leaders acquired really deep knowledge of the laws of the supersensible world and of how these laws worked together with the sense world. The contrast between the knowledge of the initiates and the mistaken beliefs of the people were stronger here than anywhere else. Greco-Latin civilization. Conditions were quite different in the areas of southern Europe and Asia Minor, where the fourth post-Atlantean cultural epoch blossomed. We can call this the Greco-Latin epoch. The migrants to these countries were the descendants of people from many different parts of the ancient world, and their oracles followed the traditions of many different Atlantean oracles. Some individuals possessed the legacy of ancient clairvoyance as a natural faculty. For others, it was relatively easy to acquire it through training. Particular centers not only preserved what had come down from the ancient initiates, but also developed worthy successors, who in turn trained disciples who were capable of rising to high levels of spiritual perception. This meant that these ethnic groups possessed an inner urge to create a place in the sense-perceptible world that would express the spiritual element in its perfect form within the physical element. This urge resulted in Greek art, among many other things. If we can understand the Greek temple through spiritual sight, we will recognize that in this marvelous work of art, human beings have transformed the sense-perceptible material element in such a way that every part of it has become an expression of the spiritual element. The Greek temple is the quote-unquote house of the spirit. In beholding its forms, we perceive what is otherwise seen only by seers. A temple of Zeus or Jupiter is fashioned in a way that presents our physical sense of sight with a worthy vessel for what the guardian of the Zeus or Jupiter initiation beheld with spiritual sight. This is true of all Greek art. In mysterious ways, the wisdom of the initiates flowed into poets, artists, and thinkers. In the constructs of ancient Greek philosophy, the mysteries of the initiates are found in the form of concepts and ideas. The influence of the spiritual life, the mysteries of the Asian and African initiation centers, flowed into these people and their leaders. The great Indian teachers, the associates of Zarathustra, and the followers of Hermes had all trained disciples, and either these disciples or their successors then founded initiation centers in which the ancient wisdom came to life in a new form. These were the mysteries of antiquity, where disciples were prepared to reach states of consciousness that would allow them to attain perception of the spiritual world. More will be said about these mysteries of antiquity in the final chapters of this book. Other details are available in my book, Christianity as Mystical Fact. Wisdom flowed out of these initiation centers to those who cultivated the mysteries of the spirit in Asia Minor, Greece, and Italy. In the Greek-speaking world, the Orphic and Eleusinian mysteries developed into important initiation centers. The great teachings and methods of wisdom from earlier times worked on in the Pythagorean school of wisdom, because Pythagoras had been initiated into the secrets of a variety of mysteries during his extensive travels. The coming of the Christian era. During the post-Atlantean period, human life between birth and death also had its effect on the post-death body-free state. As human beings increasingly turned their interests toward the physical world of the senses, it became ever more possible for Ahriman to work his way into their souls during earthly life, and then to retain this power beyond death. This danger had been very slight among the peoples of ancient India, because they experienced the physical world of the senses as an illusion during earthly life, thus extricating themselves from Ahriman's power after death. The danger was greater for the ancient Persians, who took an active interest in the physical world during the time between birth and death. They would have succumbed to Ahriman's enticements to a great extent if Zarathustra's teachings about the light god had not impressed on them the fact that a world belonging to the spirits of light stands behind the physical world of the senses. To the extent that the souls of the people of this culture absorbed the world of ideas stimulated by Zarathustra, they were able to escape from Ahriman's clutches, not only during earthly life, but also during life after death, when they were preparing for a new earthly life. During life on earth, Ahriman's power makes us see physical sense-perceptible existence as the only one, and thus blocks our view into the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, this power makes us completely isolated and focuses all our interests on ourselves. Human beings who are in Ahriman's power when they die are reborn as egoists. At the present time, through spiritual science, we can describe life between death and a new birth as it is when the Ahrimanic influence has been overcome to a certain extent. This is how the author of this book has described it in other works and in the first chapters of this book, and this is how it must be depicted in order to illustrate what people can experience after death if they have acquired a purely spiritual view of what is actually present. Whether individuals experience this to a greater or to a lesser degree depends on the extent of their victory over Ahriman's influence. We are drawing ever closer to being all that we can be in the spiritual world. However, the fact that other influences can restrict our possibilities must be kept clearly in mind as we consider the course of human evolution. Among the Egyptian people, Hermes had made sure that individuals prepared themselves during earthly life for fellowship with the spirit of light. However, because of, at that time, the pattern of people's interests between birth and death already permitted very little penetration of the physical sensory veil, Their souls' spiritual gaze remained clouded after death, and their perception of the world of light remained faint. This veiling of the spiritual world after death reached a peak among souls who entered the body-free state from incarnations during the Greco-Latin civilization. They had brought the cultivation of sensory physical existence to full flower, thus condemning themselves to a shadow existence after death. It was not empty talk, but a feeling for the truth that made a hero of that age, inclined as he was toward the life of the senses, say, quote, "rather a beggar on earth than a king in the realm of shades," unquote. Footnote: the soul of Achilles, conjured up out of Hades by sacrifices to the dead, speaks to Odysseus, quote, "Speak not wrongly of death, Lord Odysseus. I would much rather be a slave and a drudge in the fields, a pitiable man in search of his miserable food, than a king down here in the realm of the dead." Homer, The Odyssey, Song 11, end footnote. All this was still more pronounced among the Asiatic peoples, who, instead of turning their gaze to spiritual archetypes, had also made sensory representations the focus of their reverence and adoration. A large part of humanity was in this situation during the Greco-Latin cultural period. As we see post-Atlantean humanity's mission of conquering the physical world of the senses necessarily led to estrangement from the spiritual world. The greatness of this age was therefore inevitably bound up with its decline. In the mysteries, the human being's connection to the spiritual world was cultivated. In specific soul conditions, their initiates were able to receive revelations of this world. These initiates were the successors of the Atlantean guardians of the oracles, more or less. What had become veiled to others through the impact of Lucifer and Ahriman was disclosed to them. Lucifer veiled that aspect of the spiritual world that had streamed into people's astral bodies without any involvement on their part until the middle of the Atlantean Age. If the life body had not been partially separated from the physical body, people would have been able to experience this area of the spiritual world as an inner soul revelation. Because of luciferic intervention, they could do so only during special states of soul. Then a spiritual world appeared to them in astral array. In this way, superhuman beings revealed themselves, appearing as figures that consisted only of the higher members of the human makeup. These members bore astrally visible symbols of these beings' particular spiritual forces. After Ahriman's intervention in the middle of the Atlantean Age, another type of initiation was added to this one. Ahriman concealed all of that aspect of the spiritual world that would have appeared behind physical sense perceptions if this intervention had not taken place. Initiates owed the disclosure of this aspect to the fact that their souls had practiced all the faculties that human beings had acquired since that time, but to a far greater extent than was required to gain impressions of physical sense perceptible existence. Through this, the spiritual powers lying behind the forces of nature were revealed to these initiates, who were then able to speak about the spiritual beings behind the natural world. The creative powers of the forces at work in nature, below the human level, were disclosed to them. What had continued to work since the time of the Saturn, Sun, and Old Moon phases of evolution, shaping the human physical, etheric, and astral bodies, as well as the mineral, plant, and animal kingdoms, formed the content of one type of mystery. These were the mysteries Ahriman tried to conceal. What had led to the sentient mind and consciousness souls was revealed in mysteries of a second type. However, there was one thing that the mysteries could only prophesy, namely, that in the course of time an individual would appear with an astral body in which consciousness of the Sun Spirit's world of light could come about through the life body, in spite of Lucifer and without any special states of soul. This individual's physical body would have to make it possible for him to receive the revelations of the aspect of the spiritual world that Ahriman can conceal until the time of physical death. Physical death would be able to change nothing in this individual's life. That is, it would have no power over him. In such an individual, the I would manifest in such a way that his complete spiritual life would be present simultaneously in physical life. This being is the bearer of the spirit of light, to whom initiates lifted themselves up in one of two ways, by being led during special soul states, either to the spirit of the superhuman element or to the essence of the powers of nature. Since the initiates of the mysteries predicted that such a human being would appear in the course of time, they were the prophets of the Christ. An exceptional prophet in this sense arose among the Israelites, a people who had acquired near Eastern ethnic characteristics through natural heredity and Egyptian teachings through education. This prophet was Moses. His soul had been so thoroughly influenced by initiation that in exceptional states of consciousness it received the revelation of the being who had formerly assumed the role of shaping human consciousness from the moon in the normal course of Earth's evolution. In thunder and lightning, Moses saw not only physical phenomena, but also the manifestations of this spirit. However, his soul had also been worked on by mysteries of the other sort. So he had astral visions of the superhuman element becoming human through the eye. Thus the being who was to come was disclosed to Moses from two directions as the highest form of the eye. With the appearance of the Christ, the great prototype prepared for humanity by the exalted Sun Being appeared in human form. In certain respects, all mystery wisdom had to take on a new form at this point. Previously, this wisdom had existed only in order to make people capable of entering a state of soul in which they could perceive the domain of the Sun Spirit outside of earthly evolution. From this point onward, mystery wisdom was given the task of making people able to recognize the Christ who had become human, and to understand the natural and spiritual worlds out of this center of all wisdom. At that moment in the life of Christ Jesus, when his astral body first contained everything that Lucifer's intervention can conceal, he began to appear as the teacher of humanity. And human evolution on earth began to be implanted with the potential to take up the wisdom that will allow the gradual attainment of earth's physical goal. And at the moment when the event of Golgotha took place, the other possibility, which can allow Ahriman's influence to be turned toward the good, was implanted in humanity. From this point onward, human beings can take with them into death that which frees them from isolation in the spiritual world. This event in Palestine stands in the center, not only of humankind's physical evolution, but also of that of the other worlds to which human beings belong. When the mystery of Golgotha was accomplished, when the Christ had undergone death on the cross, he appeared in the world where souls lingered after death and set limits on Ahriman's power, illuminating the regions that the Greeks had called the Kingdom of Shades with a spiritual bolt of lightning that showed its inhabitants that light was meant to enter it again. What was accomplished on behalf of the physical world through the mystery of Golgotha cast its light into the spiritual world. Until this event, humankind's post-Atlantean evolution had been a time of ascent for the physical world of the senses, but also a time of decline for the spiritual world. Everything that flowed into the sensory world had its origins in what had already been present in the spiritual world since primeval times. But ever since the Christ event, people who lift themselves up to the Christ mystery are able to take what they have struggled to achieve in the sensory world with them into the spiritual world. From the spiritual world, it then flows back into the earthly world of the senses through reincarnating human beings who bring with them what the Christ impulse has become for them in the spiritual world between death and a new birth. What flowed into humanity's evolution through the appearance of the Christ worked within it like a seed that could only ripen gradually. Until now, only the very smallest part of this profound new wisdom has flowed into physical existence, which is only at the very beginning of its Christian evolution. During the ages that have elapsed since the Christ's appearance, Christian evolution has always been able to disclose only as much of its inner essence as individuals and peoples were able to receive and absorb through their capacity for thought. This knowledge was first cast in a form that could be called a comprehensive ideal for life. As such, it opposed the forms of life that post-Atlantean humanity had developed. Earlier in this book, the conditions prevailing in humanity's evolution since the repopulating of the earth in Lemurian times were described. We saw that, with regard to their souls, human beings may be traced back to various beings who came from other heavenly bodies and incarnated into the bodily descendants of the ancient Lemurians. The different races of human beings result from this fact. As a result of their karma, these reincarnated souls had widely diverging interests in life. As long as all of this was still in effect, the ideal of quote-unquote universal humanity could not exist. Humanity had its origins in a unity, but up to this point all of Earth's evolution led only to separation. The Christ concept supplied an ideal that counteracts all separation, because the forces of the exalted Sun Being, who is the origin of each human I, also lived in the human being who bore the name of Christ. The Israelites still experienced themselves first and foremost as an ethnic group. The individual was a member of that group. To begin with, the fact that the ideal human being dwells in Christ Jesus and is untouched by divisive circumstances was grasped only as a thought, and Christianity became the ideal of all-embracing fellowship. Above and beyond all special interests and relationships, the feeling arose that each person's inner I has the same origin. Alongside all of our earthly ancestors, the common Father of all human beings appears. Quote, "I and the Father are one," unquote, John 10:30. In Europe, the fourth, sixth, and, excuse me, let me read that again. In Europe, the fourth, fifth, and sixth centuries A.D. paved the way in Europe for a cultural epoch that began in the 15th century and is still going on today. This fifth post-Atlantean epoch was to gradually replace the fourth or Greco-Latin epoch. The ethnic groups who became the vehicle for this age, after undergoing various migrations and destinies, were descended from the Atlanteans, who had been least touched by everything that had taken place in the four preceding cultural epochs. They had not moved into areas where these cultures took root, but had reproduced the cultures of Atlantis in their own way. There were many individuals among them who had retained the legacy of ancient dusk-like clairvoyance, the condition we described as being halfway between waking and sleeping, to a great extent. These people knew the spiritual world as a matter of personal experience, and were able to communicate what was going on in that world to their fellows. A whole world of tales about spiritual beings and spiritual events was built up. Our ethnic treasure troves of fairy tales and legends originally developed out of spiritual experiences of this sort, since the dusk-like clairvoyance that many people possessed persisted right down into the recent past. Others had lost their clairvoyance, but they developed their acquired abilities, which related to the physical world of the senses, according to feelings and sensations that were in harmony with these clairvoyant experiences. Here, too, the Atlantean oracles had successors in the mystery centers that were everywhere. However, the secrets of initiation that developed in these mysteries were primarily ones leading to revelation of the spiritual world that Ahriman had blocked. That is, they disclosed the spiritual powers behind the forces of nature. The various European mythologies contain the remnants of what the initiates of these mysteries could disclose to people. However, these mythologies also include the other secret, although in a less perfect form than the southern and eastern mysteries. Superhuman beings were also known in Europe, but people saw them as constantly doing battle with Lucifer's companions. They did, in fact, proclaim the God of Light, but in such a form that it was impossible to tell whether he would succeed in overcoming Lucifer. However, the figure of the Christ, who was to come, also illuminated these mysteries. It was prophesied that his kingdom would succeed that of the other God of Light. All the legends about the twilight of the gods and the like have their origin in this European mystery knowledge. These influences led to a split within the human soul during the fifth cultural epoch. This split still exists today and is evident in many different phenomena of life. Human souls did not retain enough of an inclination toward the spirit from ancient times to be able to preserve the connection between the spiritual and sense-perceptible worlds. This connection was retained only as a matter of feeling and sensation, but not as a direct perception of the spiritual world. In contrast, human beings were paying more and more attention to perceiving and controlling the sense-perceptible world. The intellectual forces that awakened in the last Atlantean period, all those forces in the human being that use the physical brain as their instrument, were developed in the context of knowing and controlling the sense world. Two worlds developed within the human breast, so to speak. One of them is turned toward physical, sense-perceptible existence, while the other is receptive to the revelation of the spiritual element in order to penetrate it by means of feeling and sensation, but without direct perception. This split in the soul was already prefigured when the teaching of the Christ flowed into these areas of Europe. People took this message of the spirit to heart, imbuing their sensation and feeling with it, but were not able to build a bridge between it and what their sense-oriented intellect was exploring in physical sense-perceptible existence. The divergence we recognize today between outer science and inner spiritual knowledge is simply a consequence of this state of affairs. The Christian mysticism of Eckhart, Tauler, and others was the result of imbuing feeling and sensation with Christianity, while the exclusively sense-oriented natural sciences and their effects on our life are the results of the soul's other predisposition. We owe all our accomplishments in the domain of outer material culture entirely to this separation of our capacities. Through our one-sided turning toward physical life, the faculties that use the brain as their instrument were enhanced to the point where modern science, technology, and so on became possible. This material culture could originate only among the peoples of Europe, because they were the Atlantean descendants who developed their inclinations toward the physical sense-perceptible world into specific faculties only once that inclination had already achieved a certain maturity. They had previously allowed it to remain dormant, subsisting on their legacy of Atlantean clairvoyance and on the communications of their initiates. Whereas outwardly the spiritual culture was devoted wholly to these influences, their sense of controlling the material world was gradually maturing. At present, however, the sixth post-Atlantean cultural epoch is already dawning. For whenever something is meant to come about at some future point in humanity's evolution, it gradually matures during the preceding age. It is already possible now to begin to discover the thread that will bind the two sides of the human breast, material culture and life in the spiritual world, together again. On the one hand, this requires that we understand the results of spiritual perception. On the other, that we recognize the manifestations of the spirit in our observations of and experiences in the world of the senses. The sixth cultural epoch will fully develop the harmony between these two things. This brings our narrative to the point where we can shift from looking at the past to looking at the future. However, we will do better to consider the process of initiation and knowledge of the higher world first, and then follow this up by briefly presenting a view of the future, to the extent that this is possible within the scope of this book. The end of Chapter 4 of An Outline of Esoteric Science by Rudolf Steiner.